Monster Man, Episode 291, Desert Ghost and Fadorn.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. Today's episode is the beginning of the Conjuration section, where we look at artificial or extraplanar monsters. But before we do that, it's time to thank some new Patreon supporters. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. At the $1 level, you'll get a heartfelt expression of my thanks and some periodic bonus content. At the $2 level, you'll get access to my other show, Patron Deities, in which I talk about the deities and demigods book and religion and mythology generally. And at the $5 level, you'll get the opportunity to pick a topic for a special extra-long bonus episode. So thank you very much, Sam Daish and William Suter. I'm really glad that you're enjoying the show enough to feel like supporting it. Like I said, if you'd like to be like Sam and William, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Or if you want to support the show without spending some money, one of the most helpful things you could do is leave a rating or review on the podcasting app of your choice. All right, so we enter the Conjuration section and we have a great illustration. I have to say that overall, I feel like the standard of art in Creature Catalog is very high. It lacks some of the kind of wildness that we maybe got in Fiend Folio and Monster Manual 2, but it also lacks some of the rough spots that we got in both Monster Manual and Monster Manual 2. And this, the full-page pieces that begin each of the chapters, I think are very atmospheric. We start off with the Desert Ghost. Now, like a lot of the other monsters in this book, this gives you more than one sort of monster for your money. The Desert Ghost comes in immature and immature versions, and despite the name, Desert Ghosts are not actually ghosts at all. They're basically sandstorm elementals. This is a shame because sandstorm elemental is a much cooler sounding name, or maybe sandstorm spirit or something like that. They're held together by essentially an electrical charge, and if an immature one comes into contact with a metal object, it'll do damage, but by discharging that charge that's built up, which means that it will dissipate and never achieve its full size. The larger ones can be very dangerous. They can do a lot of damage with their electrical discharge. If they're big enough, they vary in size, and they do a number of dice of damage equal to their hit dice. And they gather during sandstorms, which is kind of fun. Like, that's like a big revel for them, you know, oh, the sandstorm is dangerous, so we have to, you know, hide in our camp. But also, this is the hour when the desert ghosts walk abroad. So yeah, this is an example of the elemental variant, which is something that we're going to see a few others of in this section, but I think this is a really fun one. Sandstorms are such a good environmental hazard because they're quite cool and romantic. I mean, I think when you think of a sandstorm, you know, either you think of sort of adventure stories, you think of Tintin always seemed to be getting caught in sandstorms to me, even if it was only the once. Maybe it was never, but I feel like there was a sandstorm in a Tintin book that I read when I was a kid. Or there's a sandstorm in The English Patient. They're associated with that kind of globe-trotting adventure fiction that so much of D&D is based on. I think it's also true that sandstorms do generate electrical charge. So just like two things rubbing together can generate static electricity, as the particles in a sandstorm strike against the ground, they do in fact generate electricity, and I believe that makes it more likely for other particles to like leap up off the ground and join the sandstorm. I read a thing about it, but I gotta confess I'm not sure I fully grasped the significance of it. But so yeah, they're a fun elemental variant, and they work because the horror of a sandstorm is real, and also sandstorm has that sort of, you expect the desert to kill you with heat and thirst, but you don't expect it to kill you with sandstorms, I guess. You know, there's something about the sandstorm that sand doesn't seem that dangerous. So when it becomes dangerous, it has this added level of kind of, there's a certain uncanny quality to the dread simoom already. Next up, we have the Fadorn. Now, the Fadorn, plural Fadorne, it's pretty common in this book for monsters to come from that they're originally published elsewhere, right? So a lot of the monsters in the Creature Catalog originally appeared in a basic D&D adventure. The Faedorn is a little bit like that, but actually, Faedornay first appear in a solo adventure that's O2 Blades of Vengeance. If you weren't gaming in the 80s, you probably don't remember how huge solo gaming was. I mean, I would venture to say that it eclipsed regular group gaming for a lot of people. And essentially, I think some of the wind was taken out of the sails by computer games, but at their height, solo game books, and I don't mean like choose your adventure books, but I mean things like Fighting Fantasy, or there were a lot of solo scenarios available for Tunnels and Trolls. Even though I started playing with Tunnels and Trolls, I never really played a lot of them. I played one or two, and I've never played a Fighting Fantasy book. I bought one, in fact, just because I had never played it, and I've never got around to it. Anyway, my point is simply that this comes from TSR's attempt to get in on the success of solo adventures. So the Faedorn originally comes from a solo scenario. Suitably, for a creature with such an 80s pedigree, the Faedorn looks incredibly 80s, with a cool asymmetric 80s like shoulder pad outfit, like a headband, swoopy 80s hair, a really just an 80s looking monster, and two daggers sheathed hilts downward right in the center of her torso. It's very hard to imagine how she can walk or sit anything but ramrod straight. Either the hilts are gonna poke her in the abdomen, or at the end of the scabbard is gonna poke her right in the shoulder. It's a pretty strange looking illustration, but very very cool. But yeah, so very good posture, Faedornay, apparently, which in fairness is in keeping with them being kind of semi-celestial fey beings, and they come with kind of a neat setting that I sort of want to check out Blades of Vengeance to find out more about, because they live on Shining Islands, which are these floating islands that appear in the sky above the world, and they're so high up, and they shine at night, that they seem to people down on the ground below to be like stars. And they develop these armies of brave creatures of neutral alignment to come and kind of, I don't know, maintain their heavenly watch with them. That would be a really cool thing to have in a fantasy game, particularly when you're trying to make that transition between low level and high level. That there's always that difficult moment where you're trying to introduce cosmic themes into a game that has had much like smaller, more intimate, more personal themes up to this point. So to have the Faedorn, you know, to have something that you have looked at all your life as a star come down out of the heavens and turn out to be this island with this immortal fairy warrior on it, and she says, "O mortals, a crisis threatens the Shining Isles. An ancient evil has awakened. You are our only hope." I don't know. I think that's pretty good and atmospheric. And the Faedornay in particular are like protectors of the Shining Isles, so they get all kinds of they're much more effective when they're on their island than when they're not. I don't know about the name, but other than that, I mean, I don't know if I prefer the idea of this race or order of fey warriors who protect these Shining Isles, or a single immortal fey who protects the Shining Isle. I think which one you have kind of is going to say something about how over the top your campaign is willing to be, but I think they both have strong possibilities. One of the things that I think is best about the Faedorn having all these advantages on the island is that the Faedorn is the kind of wise protector who might very well hear about some kind of crisis, but at the same time, they're sort of limited to the Shining Isle. That's really where they're at their strongest. So they can simultaneously be quite powerful, but also be limited in the scope of action in a way that explains why they're getting the PCs to do the quest for them and not just doing it themselves, which is always one of the big challenges of having powerful patron NPCs. So I came into this not expecting to like the Faedorn. I usually, you know, I'm resistant to more digression about, like, within the world of the Fae. And I think that in my game, I would probably make this Faedorn, you know, Faedorn, protectress of the Shining Isle, rather than one of the many Faedornay. But it seems churlish to complain. Yeah, I think these ones have got potential. I'm also going to do my very best to embrace the 80s aesthetics. I'd like to see more of this. The Fiend Folio, for all that it came out in 1981, was quite 70s-y in terms of its presentation. A bit like how Mad Men kind of argues that the 1950s continued into the early 60s quite a ways.
I think we can say that that maybe the last gasps of the 70s were still happening in the early 1980s. All right, that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're continuing the Conjurations chapter, and we're going to take a look at the Fundamental and the Gargoyle, Iron. But before that, we're going to have a special episode that's going to be all about sea serpents. All of that coming up on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.